The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, welcome back. So, just wanted to say a couple more things before opening it up for any questions, before we move into more conversation and an exercise I have in mind for us to explore. And that is, I mentioned the near enemy, not the far enemy. So the near enemy of equanimity is basically indifference, not caring one way or the other, indifference. Because it kind of seems like equanimity, but it's not. It can masquerade as it. And the far enemy, which is essentially the opposite of what equanimity is, there are two things. One is greed, kind of attaching to an outcome, attaching to something, so not having that spaciousness. The other one, which is another dimension of the opposite, is agitation or anxiety. By the way, just to say, these are not problems. None of these are a problem. You know, the far enemy or the opposite is not a problem. It's just to notice when it's coming up. And it can come up for you when you're practicing or when you're trying to cultivate equanimity. The opposite could come up, and it's not a problem. It's just something to see and work with, work through. Or when you see indifference, like, oh, I'm actually not caring at all about this thing. It's not a not to make that into a problem. Now, I can't do this equanimity thing right, or nothing, you know, can't do anything right. Don't make it into a problem. Just observe, oh, okay, this is what's happening right now. So that's why I bring these up. So recognize them, be with them, understand them, work with them the same way you work with anything in this practice. Recognizing, being with, understanding, having patience with, etc., etc. So not to problematize. And especially with the quote-unquote far enemy, which is the opposite. So if you realize you're really attached to an outcome and attached to something, or anxiety comes up, it's not uncommon. Otherwise, it wouldn't be listed the same way that. Let me give you an example of something that's more palpable. Say you're practicing metta, loving kindness, the first of the Brahmaviharas. So you're practicing metta. May you be well. May you be happy. And then all of a sudden, you know, a fight you had with this person 10 years ago that you haven't thought about for a decade. It comes up like you're angry with them. Now you hate them. That right? That's so metta, loving kindness. The opposite of that, the far enemy, is hatred. It can come up. It's okay. Like, oh, this is something that's not processed to sit with and be with. So that's how these, you know, the far enemies, near enemies, their list is there so that we become aware of them and work with them if they come up. It's not a sin. It's not that you're doing it wrong. It's just a part of cultivating this practice that there will be these things that could come up. Okay? And if it comes up today, no worries. Work with them. It's just another part of the practice. So, in a moment, I'd like to invite us into an exercise, exploratory exercise. Before that, I want to open up the opportunity to ask any questions from what the mini lecture, the mini dharma that I've given about equanimity before the break and just now. Any questions, any clarifications that might be helpful? Any questions or clarifications that might be helpful? Yeah. Any complaints? You have something? Okay, great. Yeah, please.
Even though I missed your talk, for me, at the beginning, you mentioned that equanimity is the crown jewel. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And for me, I just feel like I'm so far from being an equanimous person, it seems beyond my grasp to mm-hmm. become equanimous.
Yeah.
You know, where to even begin with that? Although I started feeling very calm during the meditation, and then I had a realization of something that made me very anxious. But
no problem.
You know, I just I don't know. For me, equanimity seems like one of the most difficult qualities to attain. And I don't even know what that's the right word to use.
I am so glad you brought this up. This is perfect. Thank you. No, this is so important because here's the thing to keep in mind. And remind me of your name.
Linda.
So this is the important thing to keep in mind. You know, when we start to think about it as, oh, can I ever be an equanimous person? Like, whoa, that's like way out there, right? It's kind of like setting the bar high. It's like the same. And there's a lot of identification in there also, right? The same way that we might berate ourselves, I'm just an angry person. I'm a discontented person. It's just like it's solidifying all these labels, whether they're negative or positive. It's that solidification where I think the tightness can come up. How about instead of thinking of it as that kind of a person that you'll become, is it possible for me to have equanimity in some moments of my life? Yes. Great, we're on board. That's it. That's it. The same way that we don't think of ourselves as a mindful person because we're not mindful every moment. I mean, anyone here? No, you know. And we can't be an equanimous person. We will lose it. It's perfectly okay until we reach the fourth stage of enlightenment. You know, we will lose it. Like and then. Ah, we come back. It's not about never losing it. It's not about that, this practice. It's about how much time it takes you to come back, how much time it takes you to come back to center, whether you can come back to center. And with some things, it might take a long time. With some things, it might take less time. And if you look back at your own practice with mindfulness, can you see some changes, things that are you're chilled, more chilled out about right now, and things that, or that it takes you less time to kind of let go? I'm like, oh, okay, I got really upset. I really blew it, but okay, I can come back. You see that, yes? Yes, you're shaking your head, yes, great. Yes, affirmative. The same thing about equanimity. Same thing. Are there ways in which in your life that you have more equanimity right now than you did before? Yes. Ways in which you can see, times at which you can see you may have it more. That's it. How does that sit? Great. Great. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Good. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah. Great. Anything else? Any questions? Yeah, please. And wait for this, please. And say your names, all of you, if you wouldn't mind. We're a cozy group today, so it's kind of nice to know the names. Now it's off.
Might be low on battery. It's red.
Oh, okay. We got to switch.
It just, what you were talking about with Linda, that makes me think about when you went to the meditation retreat and you had an intention. All of us, or anybody that wants to, could have an intention when they wake up or when they think about it in the day, I'm going to look for times when I can be equanimous. And I would imagine, I could just see myself, that if I have that as my intention, then it's probably going to happen way more often in the day because I'm consciously thinking about it.
Exactly. And actually, I think what I appreciate about that is the times that you're not equanimous, you will notice it more often. Like, oh, here it is, right? Without chastising yourself. But it's like, oh, here's another opportunity. Similar to the practice I was offering this morning, like, what would be here if there were no problems? And usually that gets invoked when you've made a problem out of something, right? Like, oh, what would be here if there wasn't a problem here right now? Right? Yeah. So it's not that to expect yourself to be perfect throughout the day when you set an intention. Like, that's not going to happen. It's okay. Right? But to really embrace the times that you become mindful of. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Or equanimity or more metta or whatever it is that you want to practice that day. Or self-compassion or, you know, great. Yeah, thank you. Anything else? Yeah, one more. Wait. No, no, you do. Please, please. Because people are also using the hearing assisted devices. Is it working? Did the battery run out already? Yeah, let's just swap it. Let's not.
No? Yeah. What piqued my interest in what you had said about the self-identification.
Yeah.
And I'm not an equanimous person. Is the like the noting of when I in previously or whenever I'm reactive, mm-hmm. I might say, "Oh, I'm angry," and what I've been doing lately is going, "Oh, there's anger," mm-hmm. or "Oh, this is agitation," and instead of saying, "I am,"
yeah,
whatever that thing is, I'm just yeah. noting it for what it is, and then that has helped create a little bit of distance between me and it,
yeah,
and less yeah. self-identification with it, especially right. when I don't like what it is.
What it is, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that, yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great, great practice, and just to notice it, and. What you, I love that. I do that also. Like, oh, anger. Oh, sadness. It's just like, oh, it's just arising. And it's much easier to have spaciousness and equanimity when, oh, it's just arising out of the cause and conditions of this being that happens to be me, with all, you know, the background, the way I've been raised, what's happened yesterday, today, this morning, biology, this. Oh, this is what's happening. This is what's arising. That is an extension of right view in the Eightfold Path. You know, that is right view. Like, you're invoking it. It's not this mighty right view. What is that? You know, this practice. It's just like, oh, this is what's arising. It's just very simple. There are these practice notes, right, that we bring in just as you brought in beautifully. You just bring in it. That's right view.
Yeah, thank you. Because I was getting reactive to being angry. So I was yeah. reactive and reacting to right, my right. reactivity.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a good Buddhist. I'm not a good meditator. I'm getting angry. And right. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? The mind. The mind has no shame. Right. Comes out with the most interesting things. Yeah. Great. Any other questions or comments? Complaints? Clarifications? Okay. All right. Yeah. Wait. Hold on. But still. And it's also for the benefit of those who might be listening to it afterwards.
I'm not so familiar with Theravadan Buddhism. Uh-huh. So in Theravada Buddhism, is there a goal to be equanimous all the time? Or does it say, I can always come back to my center?
Yeah. It's... It's interesting to put it in those terms. It's, we like to not think of it so much as a goal because it becomes an attainment and then you start to rate yourself as, oh, I succeeded or I failed or it's my goal, this is what I need. So putting it actually in that kind of a dichotomy, I wouldn't advise mm-hmm. To put it in that dichotomy. However, I think the way to see it is that it's what starts to emerge or arise, more equanimity starts to arise as the fruit of practice. You see this, and so it's not a goal to go for. It's the same way that say if you're taking a class, in high school, you're taking a class or college or whatever, in grade school, if you made the goal to get an A, ooh, it'll be a pretty miserable experience, right? You'll become competitive, you berate yourself. But if you set the goal to learn as much as you could in this topic, biology, you know, like learn it, enjoy it, then guess what? You'll probably end up getting an A anyway, but it doesn't matter. It's the process, it's the learning, it's what you become through it. Does that help?
Yeah, I was just wondering, and the bigger picture of yeah. enlightenment, Yeah. Because I personally don't mm-hmm. believe that someone's going to be enlightened finally in this state of enlightenment, and that enlightenment may be your practice.
Yeah.
Moment to moment. So I'm clarifying for myself, what is Theravada mm-hmm. practice?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I don't really know exactly.
Right. Yeah. I appreciate the inquiry and that you care enough to try to tease these things apart. I'll say one more thing about that in terms of belief in whether, about the view of enlightenment, which is not exactly the topic of the day, but I think it is relevant because we're kind of getting in that territory. I would say it's not either or. It's kind of both. It's one thing that's said is that perhaps there's not enlightened person, but an enlightened way of being, mm-hmm. right? And if the enlightened way of being becomes more and more the way you are, more and more, then I don't think there's a difference between the two, right? And whether enlightenment, again, is part of product of your daily practice, little by little, in the way you are, or whether there are some insights that can shift your view into seeing things differently in a sudden jolt. Yes, and both of them are true. It's not either or. Yeah. Follow up?
Yeah, well, yes, just that when I think this woman said she didn't think she was an equanimous person.
Yeah.
So we label ourselves that from I'm a disturbed person to that's an enlightened person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm thinking more and more in my own practice, and I believe this is consistent with what you just said, that is an activity, enlightening activity, an inquiry, always practicing towards removing suffering, mm-hmm. which was the goal, I think.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things. The last thing you just said, removing suffering. I don't think you probably don't mean removing suffering, because the idea is not for us to remove suffering, right?
Well, cessation of suffering is the third noble truth. So.
Yeah, but it's kind of a deeper conversation.
I don't want to derail the whole thing.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, it's because it's not about removing. It's cessation is a little different understanding. Yeah, I think I'd like to pause there and come back to talk. Happy to have a conversation with you offline. But if I was teaching a day long on enlightenment, then we would go at it. We would just explore all of these things. Great. So thank you for all of these questions and that you're trying to. I really appreciate that you are trying to understand and make sense of all of this. And maybe the last thing I would say is, sit with it and see what is really of practical value for you, because some of this could be, if it is getting into a heady teasing apart of these categories for you, you know, enlightened person versus enlightened activity, what is the difference? Does it make any difference for you in your real, whether or not you answered that question, you know, from a head place, would it make a difference for your lived experience? And if it doesn't, then let it go. Yeah. So with that, I'd like to invite us into a reflection together, and it's we're going to do this in small groups of small groups. So I'll figure out the size in a moment after I describe to you what it is. So it's a really a conversation we're going to have, an exploration of equanimity. What does it mean to you? If you can remember a time in your life that you have been equanimous, what did that feel like? What led to it? What supports equanimity for you? Okay. And then the opposite, what gets in the way of equanimity for you? What gets in the way of it? Okay. So there are three questions, three aspects. Each person will explore and being held witness. The first question is, what is equanimity for you? What is it? What does it feel like? Okay? What is it? What does it feel like? Remember time you've experienced it. If you're experiencing it right now, what is it like? Okay? That's question number one. What is it? Okay? Question number two, what supports it? What supports equanimity for you? Having equanimity towards something, holding it with equanimity. What supports it? The third question is the opposite. What gets in the way for you? What are the blocks? What blocks equanimity for you? Just a way of really understanding yourself a little more. Is that clear? The three questions are clear. Number one, what is it? What does it feel like? How does it express itself? How is it in the mind? How does it show up in the body? Right? What is it like? Number two, what supports it? Number three, what gets in the way of it? What blocks it? Okay, clear? Any questions about the questions? Clarification? Okay, so now we'll get into groups of four. Are we divisible? Hold on. We're odd, but it's close enough. The first thing one group will be a group of five, but it's good enough. Close enough. That's good. And also take this as a practice. By the way, so this is a day of practice, and these breakout groups, these are practice. This is the juicy part of practice in community. There is a lot of value in being held witness by others when you talk about what is happening. When you think about it in your own head or you write it down, a different kind of transformation arises when you're being held witness by other people. You realize things through their mirroring, through talking with another life human being that you may not have seen. Let yourself be surprised about your own process. I've seen this in myself, and other people have reported it over and over again. It's really valuable to do this practice. So that's part of you. So when you share, feel free to share whatever feels comfortable. You don't have to bare your heart if you don't want to. Just whatever you feel comfortable with. And speak from your heart. Really stay embodied as you speak as much as you possibly can. Not speaking from your head, but really speaking from your body. And it's not so much you're not speaking to impress others, or you're not speaking for them, really. You're speaking for yourself. This is a practice for you to verbalize while being held witness. So you're practicing for yourself. People who are sitting are serving you by holding witness. Okay? Clear? As you're listening, when you are listening, you are holding space. You're holding witness. That's all. You're not interrupting. You're not saying, yes, me too. You're not thinking about the next thing you're going to say next yourself. None of that. You're just holding space. You're only holding kind, equanimous space. It becomes a practice of equanimity for you, right? Holding with equanimity whatever the person is saying, with that warmth of equanimity, and whatever is arising in your own mind, right? Holding is internal, external practice. It's really deep, rich practice. You're not just sitting there like, you're really practicing. Okay? Make sense? Yeah? Okay. So please, form groups of four or one group of five. And it's best if you're sitting on the same level, either all on chairs or all on the floor. So, what did you discover in this exploration about any of the themes? What does equanimity feel like for you? Before I ask that individual question, let me ask, so we had four groups. If anyone would, from each of the groups, if one person, which is kind of perhaps, it's kind of hard to summarize themes, but if it is possible to just offer a few reflections of what themes perhaps came up in each group. Let's give that a try. So let's see, we start with the group here. We had a group here. Any of the members here willing to offer a few observations about the themes that maybe emerged from your conversation? More than one person can speak to it, not all at once. Hold on. Wait for the mic to come back to you. Thanks, Austin.
What comes to mind is a big theme of relationships and conflict as being a source of throwing you off balance, of losing equanimity, and how difficult that is because they come up every day, mm-hmm. whether it's at work or problems in your home or with friends. And we all unanimously did feel that meditation and practicing meditation was really helpful in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So one thing that emerged was that something that supports is actually meditating and having a practice supports you. And also what can be a challenge is people, relationships. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say people, but relationships, it's the ultimate practice. Right. You know, it's much easier to be equanimous on your cushion when you're observing things come and go, yes, but really it's where the rubber meets the road. Right. Great, wonderful. It's great to see that. It's hard. It's not easy, right?
Relationships?
Well. Great. Thank you. Let's pass it to someone in the next group. Where would like to say a few words, that'd be lovely.
Well, my observation were that we all saw this connection of the different Brahma Viharas, although we didn't necessarily say that, but a few of us talked about how metta practice supports the equanimity.
Nice.
And also the sense of compassion and distance and being able to separate yourself from the reaction that you're having. So anybody want to add anything else?
Yeah, others can add. It's all good. Okay. Yeah, Siobhan, your hand went up. No?
One thing I think we could that this kind of practice highlights is how we're not alone, and how part of the human condition is so many of us can feel the same types of things. Yeah. Not that everybody had the same answers, but one theme definitely was that when you do a practice, and if it's meditation, that's great, or even yoga or something like mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. helps you be aware of equanimity mm-hmm. also. Really cements in the intention, the idea, and can bring you back to being there.
Nice. So intention was really the one thing that came up was the importance of intention and hanging in with a practice, whatever practice, whatever.
Practice, right.
Great.
And just, I know that there were some, you know, we're appreciative and there was lots of insights, but that's kind of a summary.
Great, thank you. Anybody else in the group wants to add something? Great.
Yes.
There was a very clear theme about self-compassion.
Yeah.
And how we all needed to be in touch with that to move forward with anything.
Yeah.
It was kind of the foundation.
Nice, great. Okay. Wonderful, great.
Yeah, I think
well, for me and a few other people in the group, the like idea of a lot of space and spaciousness definitely came up, kind of the opposite of tunnel vision, just like allowing the space for kind of whatever emotions to arise. I liked the metaphor of kind of the winds, mm-hmm. and kind of feeling the wind but not letting it blow you over is mm-hmm. kind of how I took that. Mm-hmm. The practice people all kind of mentioned, including me, and just certain people have that energy and then certain people do kind of cause the hindrance of it's difficult to have kind of that peace and equanimity and with.
Great, thank you. Anybody else wants to add anything? Yeah, great.
I had mentioned this and felt like sharing it some more is the word inclusivity.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying it right.
Inclusivity.
Yeah, inclusivity really comes up for me with equanimity of just kind of what he was sharing of allowing sensations, thoughts, feelings to come through without attaching so much to them, and and with the compassion is allowing it. It's like the love of including all of that experience, as opposed to blocking any of it, which I tended to do in the past. So
nice. Yeah, thank you for bringing that in, the idea of including it all, nothing left out, and also tying that with the theme of self-compassion and compassion that was brought in and the other Brahmaviharas, that it's becoming apparent already to you in your conversations that equanimity has that warmth. It's not indifferent. It's not cold. It's not aloof. It has that care that allows the inclusivity, the presence, the care to be there. Great. Lovely. Yeah. Other thoughts, other reflections, not necessarily the general themes, but what came up for you perhaps, something that you realize in this exploration as you either spoke or heard other people speak, or maybe in the whole gestalt of the conversation. What else? Floor is open.
I'll share one more.
Yeah, sure.
Afterwards, I realized, like, I think I was just speaking a lot from my head, and I wasn't including my body sensations as much. So that was just something that came up for me of not being as present of the feeling states, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I could tend to just speak from the neck up and not including all of my experiences in that moment.
From
the neck down.
Thanks for naming that, because in the practice of mindful speaking and listening, it tends to be easier to stay embodied when we're listening. When we're speaking, it just tends to be harder. So don't be hard on yourself. Take it on as a practice. And keep coming back. Keep coming back. Keep checking in. When you're, say, sitting and sending an email, keep coming back. Or sitting in a meeting at work, keep checking back. Or in a conversation with someone, keep checking back. Do I feel my feet on the floor? Can I feel my bottom on the cushion? It's just my hands. Can I feel the coolness of the hands? Very simple. Helps you stay embodied in subtle ways. Yeah, in maybe subtle or not so subtle ways. And yeah, it tends to be harder when speaking than listening. Mm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Anything else? Any questions? Yeah, over here. Oh, do. Oh, okay, yeah, I didn't see that.
I think compassion is such a huge part of being equanimous, to have an open heart. And, you know, through this practice, I've just come to realize when I'm tight, when something is tightened up.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I'm off, you know, and then to really see what the situation is and to make and to try to clarify it so you can get back. I mean, take the action that mm-hmm. is necessary so you can get back and remove that thought, the thing that is blocking, mm-hmm. making you angry, tight, mm-hmm. whatever the situation mm-hmm. could be.
Yeah. It's interesting to discover how all the Brahma Viharas are really related. They're all related, really. How equanimity really serves as the basis for compassion and loving kindness and sympathetic joy, and kind of vice versa. They all support each other. And also another way, which we'll explore more this afternoon with the formal practice of compassion. So what I've spoken about so far and what we've explored this morning is a stance of compassion. And this morning with the guided meditation was really tapping into a stance of compassion, spaciousness, stability. Not so much the formal practice, which is a formal practice with phrases. May I be okay with the coming and going of things? May I hold this with ease? May I accept things just as they are? Things are just as they are. There are different phrases which we'll explore this afternoon. But it can be a very formal practice, the same way that you practice metta or compassion, say metta, loving kindness, may you be safe, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you have ease, you know, these formal sentences that you say in order to cultivate, in order to stay the course. With equanimity, there are some phrases that not only do you tap into the feeling, but you tap into the phrases and you keep saying them. Because, by the way, the Brahma Viharas are concentration practices too. You stay with one object, you say the same phrases, and the concentration samatha, the mind calms down more and more, becomes stable, even more and more stable. So to come back to what you were saying, again, the relationship between compassion and equanimity. Another way that it shows up is this. So let me take a step back. So one way to see all the Brahma Viharas, the four, is that the central one, the main one, the first one, is metta, loving kindness. It's this goodwill of the heart. Kindness, just goodwill, just basic humanity, goodwill, kindness. May you be well, may you be happy, may you be okay. You other human being, just like me, may you be happy too. Just simple goodwill and friendliness. Like when you walk down the street and say, hi, you smile at someone, that's metta. You know, just goodwill. Get out of my way. You know, it's metta, goodwill. May you have a good day, okay? So metta, being this goodwill, it's just simple goodwill of the heart that comes in contact when it comes in contact with another being that's in a neutral space, neither suffering nor happy, it stays metta, stays goodwill, just kind of neutral, okay? Metta, goodwill, when it comes in contact with a being that is suffering, it becomes compassion. It expresses itself as compassion. The goodwill holds the pain and wishes it to be eased. May you be free from your suffering. May you hold your suffering with ease. So again, the basic feeling is metta, goodwill, comes in contact with someone who's suffering, which might be yourself, in which case it becomes self-compassion, holds the suffering and wishes it to be eased. Okay? So metta plus suffering becomes compassion. Metta, when it comes in contact with someone, with a being that's in a good state, is really happy, really doing well, it becomes mudita, becomes vicarious joy. Oh, I'm happy for your happiness. May it continue. May it increase. I'm so happy that you're happy. Yay. You become happy for the other person's happiness. Again, goodwill, just general goodwill, comes in contact with someone who's in a good state, not suffering, that's compassion, but in a good state, happy, doing well, it becomes vicarious joy. Okay? So we've covered the three so far. Now we come to equanimity. What about that? There are different ways that this is taught, interpreted. So one is that when the goodwill, so one is that the goodwill is just holds. It's just holds. It's just base. It's just the stability that holds everything that comes into experience, right? It's just holding, not moving towards, not moving against. There's that basic, it's a universal kind of goodwill of holding, okay? That's one way. Another way that also relates to practice of compassion is sometimes the suffering of the other person might be just too much and you find yourself falling into empathetic distress. No matter how much you think you practice, may you hold your suffering with ease, I care about your suffering, etc. It's just too much. It's just overwhelming. At that point, what might be appropriate for you is to start practicing equanimity. Things are just as they are. Things are just as they are. May I accept things just as they are? And the more traditional phrasing is that people are heir to their own karma. My wishing them, my good wishes for them does not affect the outcomes. And I'll tell you more about that later this afternoon, so you no need to write it down yet. I'll give you the traditional phrasing, which some people like, some people find problematic, but we'll explore that more this afternoon. But basically, that's one way that also relating to what Ginny was talking about in terms of relationship with compassion, equanimity relates to compassion. Just, may I accept things just as they are. May you accept things just as they are for you. And there was one more hand. Yes, there was a hand here. Is that still relevant? Yes. Wait, Trevor, wait for... If not, it's cool.
I don't know if I'd really have the question anymore. But yeah, I guess kind of on that last part that you brought up, using the phrases on karma, which I had forgotten about, are helpful, but still I can't help but think about equanimity in terms of really serious situations, you know, of extreme mm-hmm. poverty and extreme kind of violence and you know, just what's going on in the world in other countries and that sort of thing. How equanimity can really be a part of that experience, yeah. Truthfully,
yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
But
yeah.
I guess that's just practice
yeah.
time.
Yeah, and yeah. it's also a very good inquiry. So is it, I mean, the one way that what you said, the sentiment you express, which is even expressed even more radically, is that, is it even appropriate to have equanimity when there is so much suffering in the world? Shouldn't we be up in arms and angry and doing something instead of being equanimous? That's a great question. And the perspective is that equanimity doesn't mean inaction. It does not mean that at all. It means taking action from a place that is stable and spacious and non-reactive. When you actually have the equanimity, stability, and then you can actually be much more empowered to take action and do good in the world instead of making the actions from a place of anger, reactivity, which can actually be more harmful for everyone involved. So again, equanimity doesn't mean indifference. See, that question comes from equating equanimity with indifference. It's not indifference. It cares, but it's a stable. It has the bird's eye view.
Yeah, I guess I didn't mean the indifference part.
Yeah.
But just, yeah. I don't know exactly if I could put it into words what I mean. But... Yeah, that's, I don't know, yeah. Something like that. It's just a really big challenge of the heart. So I guess it's you know, I don't have the question for it right now. So
There's another theme, actually. I'm going to pick up on another theme that you mentioned, and that is with the, I think it's the problem that usually comes over for people with the traditional phrasing of it. So that people are the heir to their own karma. And it also that comes from a misunderstanding of the teaching of karma and how it should be used and interpreted, and not to blame people. Oh, it's just their karma. That person is poor or being treated badly or social justice. Oh, it's just their karma. It's like, ouch. That's just the wrong way to take that practice. The translation, actually, which I often use, is that people are heir to their own actions. So it's not so much like, whoa, we don't know what they did. It's their own. No, it's their actions. So for example, if you have a friend or a relative that they just keep suffering, and you want them to stop suffering, you want them to dig them, but to realize that there's something about not just their own actions, but the cause and conditions, and try to have stability, and then take a wise action from there. It's not a tool. Equanimity is not a weapon to you to justify inaction or justify violence or social injustice at all. That's the wrong interpretation. So that might be aspect that you were kind of tapping to. I don't know if that your question has to do with that, but anyway.
Yeah, no, and I don't want to take too much time. And I suppose the last bit that I threw out there is that just, equanimity can be there. I suppose this is where the crux is for me. Like, even if there's absolutely nothing you can do in whatever, you know, situation it is, relationship or, you know, the more extreme situations, like, to have equanimity in those, that's where my curiosity is. Mm-hmm. But,
It's interesting, actually. So it also depends on what the definition of do is. Would you stop caring just because you can't take action? And it's not wise to take action? For example, let's say there are two dear people in your family, they just keep hurting each other. And there's nothing you can really do about it. Will you stop caring? No. Equanimity will still be there. May I be okay with that? I cannot do anything here, and it's painful. And may I hold things just as they are. You continue to care. You continue to care. And so that aspect of continuing to care, it ties in with the other Brahmaviharas. It's not aloof, like, well, I can't do anything. So, you guys, it's different. It's. So I'll let you sit with that.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So lunchtime is approaching, but any other last minute questions or comments? Burning questions, comments, please.
I just had a couple of insights as I was sitting here. One is about when I'm not equanimous.
Yeah.
I'm like a tightly wound spring that is just waiting for something to, like, go, you know. And
great.
When I am, I'm not. I'm like the spring in its natural resting state. So when I return to that, I feel that sense of, like,
nice.
Oh, I've returned to kind of this
nice
place.
Nice.
And just as you were speaking, Nikki, I was thinking, I have to remember that caring is a doing. It is a practice. In fact, I have it, like, written in... I haven't looked in these journals in a while, but I know that I've had it written, because there's been a time where I felt like, what do I do here? Metta. I can still love the person. I am doing something. I cannot change the situation. But I can't do that when I'm in the tightly round spring place. I want to do something. I want to, like, respond.
Right.
So
right.
Thank you. That was just all of this kind of coming together is, like, bringing me to, like, this insight that I hadn't. I mean, I knew it, but I had to be reminded of it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that's a perfect place to end this morning and go to lunch. Thank you for that. Yeah. So it's 12:31. Let's take an hour for lunch. And if you've brought your lunch, you can heat it in the kitchen. We will put out tables to sit out here. If you haven't brought your lunch, there are places nearby to go get them. You can ask the locals. Maybe I might even be able to tell you where to go. And any questions about lunch? Hello, welcome back. So, before we start our practice together this afternoon, how are you feeling? Shout out a few words. How are you feeling right now? Great? Great? What else? Yeah? Good? What else? Say that again, sir. Oh, great. Great. So you had an opportunity to practice at Whole Foods with parking and the crowds. Great. So you feel well practiced over the. Great. Great. What else? How else are you feeling right now as you check in to your body and mind? And we're recording, right? Yeah. And how are you feeling? Ease. Grounded? Gratitude? What else? Happy to be here? Great.
I'm stimulated from the conversations at lunch.
Stimulated from conversations at lunch. Great. Somebody else also says, an hour went by really quickly. This could have been longer. The conversations were great. Awesome. Nice. What else? Connected? Great. Anything else? Anyone sleepy? Yes? Raise your hand if you're feeling sleepy. Yeah, of course, it's the afternoon space, yeah. Oh, I'm feeling a little sleepy myself. It's, anyone feeling cold? Yeah, that's right. I turned the thermostat up, but it's still a little chilly. Might have to do that a little more. It's a cold day. So, yeah, great. So, everything is here. Well, I mean, not everything. A lot of things are here. Not everything. A lot of things are here. To have equanimity with them. So again, before we start, any reflections or any questions that might have come up based on what we did this morning and what we discussed this morning to address before we move on to more practice? Okay. All right. So let me tell you what I had in mind for this afternoon. So there is the formal practice of equanimity, as I mentioned, which is done with phrases, with various phrases. It's really concentration practice. And it's really cultivation practice because as we've experienced this morning, one way to arrive at equanimity is through kind of dropping into the spaciousness, dropping into the ease, dropping into the bird's eye view. So there are many different ways into it. And one way is this cultivation. It's a cultivation of little by little hanging in there, expanding, extending it a little more, just a little more. So this afternoon, to explore that cultivation practice together, which like the other Brahmaviharas, is done in concentric circles with different categories. If you have practiced either together or in other occasions, for example, metta, traditionally you start with yourself, then you go to your benefactor, then the other next category is a dear friend, next category is a neutral person, someone you don't know very well, so you don't have a strong feeling about, next person is someone you're having difficulty with, so you have feelings about, but not pleasant ones. The next category is all beings. So the practice is extended more and more and more. With practice of with the practice of equanimity, we tend to start with the person, the neutral person, actually, person whom you don't have a strong feeling about. So that's where we start, and then we go to ourselves, and then to the dear benefactor and dear being, etc., because that brings up more attachment. There's attachment to outcome for their lives. You want him to be well, you want him to be happy, so having sense of equanimity and ease might be more challenging. So we, with all these practices, we start where it's easiest. We start where it's easiest. Does that make sense? It might be easiest to start with someone you kind of know, you don't know, you know, someone who works at the checkout counter, say, at a grocery store, or a barista, or a neighbor that you see, but you don't really have a feeling about them one way or the other very strongly. So here's the thing. So I wanted to guide us through a guided meditation and kind of one to explore these different categories. So it could be a longer one, but also this is the post-lunch space. So I'm going to put you guys to sleep as well as myself. So here's the caveat with doing a guided meditation right after lunch is the probability of falling asleep is pretty high. Even if you're not sleepy right now, it might arise. So this is what I'm going to ask you. I'm going to ask you to self-monitor, and if you realize that you're getting sleepy, open your eyes. Very gently open your eyes to bring in more light, and then stand up. I might do that too while I'm giving the instructions. So stand up, do standing meditation while you follow instructions. It will become an interesting practice too for you to explore. Yeah, I don't have to be sitting to be meditating. I can be standing and with my eyes open following the guided meditation. Okay? And don't be shy. Standing meditation is the standing posture is just as worthwhile as sitting posture with your eyes closed. One is not more valued in the suttas than the other. The four postures, sitting, lying down, standing, and walking, they are the same. So get over that. If you have an attachment to sitting is where it's at, get over it. Get up, challenge yourself to not be shy, to get up and do that. So can we have that agreement that you'll self-monitor and stand up and open your eyes? Yeah? Yes? Cool. All right. So with that, should we try it? Yeah? Okay. All right. So if you need to stretch your body a little bit to get into a more comfortable position, and if you're feeling sleepy already, get up right now. Start doing standing meditation right now. Nothing wrong with it. If you need more props to make yourself comfortable, please go get more props. It's all good. And whenever you're ready, arriving in this body, whether standing or sitting, relaxing, softening with every in-breath, bringing in a little more energy and awakeness, and with every out-breath, settling in some more into the body. In and out. Allowing the breath to move freely and to be felt in your abdomen, your chest, nostrils, the rush of air at your upper lip. or their whole body bellowing, just wherever it's easiest. Calming and settling. Calming and settling. Every in-breath, every out-breath. And remember, at any point, if you notice you're getting sleepy, it's okay to get up, stand up. Having a comfortable stance of your feet, roughly shoulder width, and letting your hands, your shoulders hang down on your side. Bringing awareness to the body, breathing, this body breathing. Resting, resting in stillness and stability, in stillness. As if there is a calm lake within. Calm, expansive lake. And to warm us up for the practice, I'd like to share with you a poem by Walt Whitman. Leaves of Grass is the name of the poem. He says, "I exist as I am. That is enough. If no other in the world be aware, I sit content. And if each and all be aware, I sit content." One world is aware, and by far the largest to me. and that is myself. And whether I come to my own today, or in 10,000 or 10 million years, I can cheerfully take it now, or with equal cheerfulness, I can wait. I can wait. I exist as I am. That is enough. Resting, settling. In the enoughness of this simple experience. I'd like to invite you to bring to mind someone whom you kind of know, but not really. Again, maybe someone who works at a checkout counter at a grocery store, or at a place you get your coffee, or maybe a neighbor, or someone who works at a laundromat, or someone you've just kind of seen, but don't have a strong like or dislike, don't know much about them really, except that they're a human being just like you, someone you've seen. Or it could even be someone here today that you haven't really talked to, you've just kind of seen them. And bring this being, this person to mind. As vividly as you can. As possible, as if they were sitting right in front of you. And acknowledging that this human being just like you. We want to be happy. And by the way, if you keep going through the Rolodex of your mind and you find slight likes or slight dislikes, you don't find someone who's completely neutral, that's okay. That's all right then. Someone you don't have much of a history with or know much of, it's okay. Just bring them forward as if they're in front of you and realize that this being, this human being just like you, they just want to be happy. Just like you, this being doesn't want to suffer. They're a human being with just as rich an inner life as you have, with thoughts and feelings and emotions and hopes and dreams and disappointments and sadness and loss and joys. Just like you, they've known the taste of sadness and pain, physical pain, emotional pain. Just like you, they've been happy. They've had happiness in their lives. You're the object of affection of someone. Somebody holds them dear, cares about this being, this person. And they care about somebody else. They might be a mother, a father, a daughter, a son, a sibling, a child of someone, a parent of someone, a friend to someone, a partner to someone. Just like you, they don't want to suffer. Just like you, they have hopes and dreams. Realizing this common humanity, this bond that you share, you could have been born into their shoes. They could have been born into your shoes. Who knows this mystery of life? And from this understanding of common humanity, and realizing that just like you, this person has pain and sorrow and difficulty, holding their difficulty, their suffering, their sadness. Whatever it may be, you don't know the story, but you can be sure that they have them. From this place of this understanding, holding this being, this person, and whatever is arising for them with a sense of equanimity, which is not indifferent, a sense of presence, sense of care, which also has equanimity, neither moving towards nor away from, but holding things just as they are, acknowledging them just as they are. And you can choose one of the following phrases. I'll offer a bunch of them. Things are just as they are right now. Things are just as they are right now. Or no matter how I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are. Or, I care for you, but I can't control your happiness or unhappiness. Or, may you be undisturbed by the comings and going of events. Or, I care for you, but cannot keep you from suffering. Or, as you keep them in mind, may we all accept things as they are. Or, all beings are owners of their actions, heirs to their actions, their happiness and unhappiness depends on their actions, not on my wishes for them. Or may you, or may I accept things just as they are. May I accept things just as they are. May you accept things just as they are. Or things are as they are. It is what it is. whatever phrase you choose, and I've offered you many different options and flavors, resting in the space of caring equanimity, spacious, not attached to outcome, neither moving towards or away from or pushing away. Things are as they are. May I accept things just as they are, or may you accept things just as they are. May you, or I, or we, be okay with the comings and goings of things. Care for you, but cannot keep you from suffering. I'd like to invite you to turn your attention to something about your own life. Is there something happening in your life that might be a bit challenging? Or maybe something right now that's coming up for you in this moment, in this experience that you're working with. An emotion, physical pain, whatever it might be. And then choosing one of these phrases to repeat silently to yourself. Things are just as they are. Things are just as they are right now. Or no matter how much I wish things to be otherwise, they are as they are. Or may I accept. May I accept this just as it is? May I open up to the possibility to be with this just as it is. Or may I accept the conditions of my life with ease. May I accept the conditions of my life with ease. Or may I be undisturbed by the comings and goings of things. May I be undisturbed. By the comings and goings of things. Or it is what it is. It is what it is. May I accept things just as they are. May I accept things just as they are. May I be okay with the unfolding of things just as they are. Or simply, it is what it is. It is what it is. Or it's like this. It's like this. It's like this. Or this too, this too, this too. Or may I be at peace, may I be at peace. May I accept things just as they are. Or it is what it is. I accept the conditions of my life with ease. Having a bird's eye view in the situation, the spaciousness, and repeating the phrases. Whether or not I understand it. Things are unfolding according to a lawful nature. And remember, this is not a practice to push. If you find that there is not equanimity with respect to an issue, then invite acceptance and equanimity with lack of equanimity for this issue. May I hold and accept my lack of equanimity with ease. Now I'd like to invite you to turn your mind, your awareness, to someone who's dear to you in your life. Someone whom you care about and maybe going through some difficulty. That you care about. Bring this being to mind as clearly and vividly as possible. Whether it's a being, a person, or an animal, or a child. And bring to mind the connection you have with them. Let yourself feel the connection you have with this person, this being. And resting in a bird's eye view of the whole situation. Holding it with a lot of space. Choosing one of the following phrases to work with. Things are just as they are right now. I wish you happiness, but I cannot make your choices for you. Or I care for you, but cannot keep you from suffering. Or, no matter how I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are. Things are as they are. Or, I care for you, but cannot control your happiness and unhappiness. or may I, you, or we be undisturbed by the comings and goings of things. Or may I accept this just as it is. May I accept this just as it is. Or the traditional phrasing, all beings are owners of their actions, heirs to their actions. Their happiness and unhappiness depends on their actions, not on my wishes for them. Or all beings have their own journey. All beings have their own journey. Whatever works for you. Make it the phrase that you keep repeating silently and connecting with a sense of spaciousness and holding things just as they are. It is what it is. It is what it is. May you accept the conditions of your life with ease. May I accept the conditions of your life with ease. Okay, so this was a flavor of the practice of cultivating equanimity, and there's still more categories left, and I figured we got enough of a taste of this cultivation practice is, and can leave the other categories, which are the person we have difficulty with, and the all beings category. That's left as an exercise for the practitioner. So you can try that later. So, I think it would be good to have a little conversation about this, to explore what worked, what didn't work, and also bring up the energy a little more. So let's get into groups of size 3, which are more dynamic, and ideally not with people you've already met with earlier today. And it's a conversation. You'll go around, and again, it will be the same, holding space. You're speaking for yourself, for your own benefit, not for others. Practicing embodiment while you're listening, embodiment as much as possible when you're speaking. But what this practice was like for you, what worked, what didn't, what were some of the challenges, what you discovered, what phrases worked for you, just really an exploration together. Actually, I think groups of 3 is probably good. Oh, I always like bigger groups too. All right, let's try, see if we're divisible by 3. Go ahead, let's try it out. Okay. Might as well. Or you can stay. Oh, actually, let me turn this off. Are you? Perfect. Perfect. That's great. So, please, whoever wants to start, please start. And it's pretty simple. What was this like for you? What did you discover from this practice? Go for it. Hold on, one more instruction, sorry, one more instruction. We're going to do this in a spiral format. And let me tell you what spiral is. One person will start and you'll share one idea, not a whole long monologue, just like one idea. You might have a lot more to say, but you just share one, then the next person shares one idea, the third person shares, and then you repeat again, you go in a spiral, and what you hear will conjure up more reflections for you. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay, great, go for it. So how was it to discuss? How was that? It was really good. Yeah, great. Yeah, seemed pretty juicy. You guys were going and going and going and going in spirals. It's great. Seemed pretty lively. More energy now than compared to after lunch. Yes. No, you're not sleepy anymore. Totally. I know. No, now you'll be all awake. It's great. So since it worked so well earlier to ask each group to kind of talk about themes before inviting comments from just all comments. Let's do that again. Let's go group by group. They have the mic, Jenny. Thank you. Actually, why don't we start from there, from your group, whatever group you were in. And multiple people can talk from the same group. Okay, go ahead.
Well, any themes? Had a pretty juicy conversation. A lot of it went around compassion. Right at the end, we were talking about dealing with angry people, mm-hmm. and feeling compassionate because they know that they're coming from pain. Mm-hmm. We talked about how we have been growing in this program and that it is boundless, and that there will be no end to the growth that we can experience in as we go forward. There was a lot more. Maybe someone else in my group will pick it up.
Great. Great, thank you. Yeah, pass it on.
We were talking about essentially radical acceptance of what is, and that relates to how the path is endless, the Buddha path is endless, the gates are endless, and you keep going through them and you keep going on the path and there is no done. You're never finished, and that's perfectly okay, and it's okay to be wherever you are. And the growth is endless, and
nice.
Through this path, I've realized nirvana is endless. All these different things that I get to experience of beauty and bliss, they're eternal the more that I go on the path. And wherever I am now, that's fine. I completely accept that. So there was a lot of talk of radical acceptance, radical self-acceptance, and with that also radical self-compassion. Because in order to go on this path and to be comfortable with what is and to be comfortable with yourself where you are, you must have a lot of self-compassion lots of patience and lots of love for self, because only with self-compassion can there be inner peace.
Nice. Thank you. Nice. Yeah, sure. That's so good. You have the energy. Take it.
To dovetail off of that, because that was so beautifully said, we had talked about feelings of when you feel like you got it, when you're like, oh, I got it now, I'm good, and then something will happen, and then you're like, oh no, I don't have it. And that continual process, but that I was sharing, I used to beat myself up when I thought I had reached a new level, and then fell back down 10 places, and then really took that hard, which so then it's suffering with that, it's that second arrow, right. More suffering about the first suffering. And so we talked a lot about just knowing that it's a process and being patient and moving forward. I'm getting lost now, but yeah, it was really a really juicy conversation.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you. Pass it on. Just give it to someone.
Me? I think our group shared initially about just our mind wandering and attention and how it could get pulled away. We did go quite deep, I think, with just how compassion for others is also part of not knowing what's next and being kind of accepting of it, not knowing.
Yeah.
Kind of share what Livia said,
right,
shared. Of
right,
like,
and that ties in with equanimity, like not knowing. It's being okay with what, being okay with not knowing. Be okay with that, accepting that, just as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice, thank you. This is, I love it. Just give it to someone, either pass it or keep, or say something.
I think one thing our group, I think, found interesting was like the number of phrases. It was hard to necessarily latch on to specific ones, but there was one that we all had kind of liked, which was like, despite the comings and goings, may I be at ease. I don't know the exact phrasing of it, but just that idea of, you know, it's kind of the meta practice is like, may you be at ease. It's a little simpler. This is like adding a level of like, despite whatever's going on, may you be at ease.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I liked kind of, for another person, taking that word, I like the phrase, you know, I care for you, and like, no, I can't control your happiness and control your suffering, because I tend to try to do that. So it's nice to, that phrase helped me kind of, gives more space to that feeling.
Great, great. Thanks for sharing that. And it's nice to have all these different phrases that I was suggesting from the different perspectives and aspects, and some of them might work better for you yourself, a situation. Some might work better when you're thinking about someone you care about. So just trying the different ones on the different things, and then the different flavors of the phrases I offered with the let's see, one was the comings and goings of things. I think that's the one you're referring to, right? Let's see if I can quickly find it. I like the way you put it, and also just so many phrases here. Which one was it? Oh, here it is. May I or you or we be undisturbed by the comings and goings of things. Which, in a way, it's not so much despite the coming, but it's with the coming. It's like not excluding anything. May I be undisturbed, may I be okay, may I accept the comings and goings of things, all these winds of fortune, the praise and blame and sadness and joy, and may I be okay with comings and goings, so accept that that's part of life. Yeah, great. Thank you for that. Yeah, I appreciate you commenting on the various choices. What else? Keep passing. Yeah.
Hi, Austin here. One of the people in my group shared a pretty touching story about how someone in their life that they love so much that kind of is almost dangerous to them and really can harm them and has harmed them, but they really love them so much that they would die for that person. So it's like, what do you... It's kind of like with the compassion, having compassion for them, even though they're suffering, compassion for them, they could potentially hurt you, maybe they have, still compassion, but with the wisdom, with setting boundaries, but can you set boundaries when you would die for that person? I don't know. I've never really had anything like that in my life, so it was kind of hard to like kind of connect with that. I kind of was like, well, I would just cut that person off. Yeah. But totally different situation. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like you've been really touched by that, Austin, which is why you're bringing it up, since it's not your own experience. Somebody else is like, wow, how does that feel? You're trying that on for size. And so to honor that and also honor what was shared, really, the beauty of the care. And many times with parents, that's how parents feel. You know, they would do anything for their children. They would die for their children, of course, protecting a child. So may not be a familiar feeling for you, but just to honor that. And since it's not directly your experience, and I cannot directly speak to it, right? But it's, yeah, like, how do you sit with that? I think for you just to sit with, that can be the extent of caring. So I think I'll just leave it at that and not get into it much anymore. Is that okay? Yeah. Yeah, keep passing it on. Yeah, pass.
We haven't had our group.
One thing, it was great conversation. One thing we brought up that we kind of talked about the second half was when you are being equanimous or having equanimity for the people you love who you asked us to find a challenging, something that's challenging for them or a person who's having some challenges.
Exactly.
And we had a discussion around when you ask that, you know, even if it's somebody you love and you know what's going on in their life, how do you know if they're really, I mean, even if you know them well, how do you know what's suffering?
Right.
And even if you know what is going on in their life, I mean, I found myself asking, so am I, you know, 1 to 10, how much suffering is it? I mean, you know, so like you, so I guess the point, and we ended up kind of deciding in the end, the point is that, similar to what, is it John? That John was, that it's just kind of whatever is there. We all suffer, and whatever is there is what I'm offering you.
Perfect. That's great. I love that. I appreciate that your inner wisdom came up with that. Yeah, that's what I would have said too. Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Well, I was explaining, I'm new to this. This is my first time I ever heard of this subject or anything. I came. I came because you were so great last time. I said I wanted to take another class for you. But one of the things that came up for me, and I was sharing with the other two guys, was that when I reached out to someone to say may they be able to be at ease with what's going on in their life, sometimes I find out, well, Janet, maybe you may be the source of that. You know, how do you feel about that? You know, and it was kind of like, I was kind of conflicted to say, what do I do with that? You know? So I don't know the answer to that. I was sharing that my husband and I are going through getting our bathroom renovated, and the contract was coming out, and it was a big to-do, and this morning we had to call it off because I had done something, and he was very upset about it, you know. So I'm saying, may he be at ease with the coming and going in his life. It's like, but you didn't do something.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let me sit with that for a moment. Let me sit with that situation. It's kind of interesting, you know, because in this case, and I mean, there are different ways of framing, right? It's one is, may you hold whatever, you know, may your husband, for example, may you hold, you know, whatever is happening for you with ease. You're wishing them equanimity. So even if you've, if you have caused a situation, but you're wishing them to, may they hold it with ease, right? That's one perspective there. And another perspective is that, may I hold your, that you're disturbed, may I hold that with peace, with ease, right? That I cannot control you getting angry. I can't control your happiness and unhappiness. And may I hold that with ease, that I don't have control over your emotions. Right, I can wish for you to be at ease, but I don't have control over it. May I hold that lack of control, which we all want, the fact that I don't have that. I wish you ease, but you know, I don't have control over it. So may I have ease that you don't have ease. Does that make sense? Yeah, there are so many different perspectives to have this practice. Yeah, to practice, it's great. Thank you. Yeah.
So near the end, one of the things that I shared and we discussed about was, I think there was unanimity, imagining doing this practice for a difficult person has a very different quality than doing metta for somebody else. It's like, I got to open my heart and have loving kindness for you when I find you really difficult. Whereas this is, oh my God, it's so much easier to say, I hope, you're obviously struggling. I hope that you have some equanimity because I find you really difficult.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just so interesting to see.
I see what you're...
Do you get what I'm saying? It's like the difficult person is actually kind of easy in this practice.
Not so much, actually. It isn't.
Okay.
It isn't easy. The easiest person is the neutral person, which is why we do them first, because you don't really know much about them. May you hold it with ease. May you hold things as they are. Difficult person is actually more difficult, which is why it comes later. Let me tell you why.
Okay.
Because it can veer into, like, well, you're getting what you deserve.
Oh.
It can, just like that, well, you're suffering because you're a difficult person. You know, that tone can get into aversion and indifference. And, I don't really care about your suffering. You know, you can suffer all you want and may you hold it with ease. But, you know, over there, right? It's... See where it can kind of fall into instead of, I care for you and I can't. So it's actually quite challenging to get to that spot, that sweet spot. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I was in the same group. And actually, my way of looking at that difficult person was that if I'm in a place of equanimity, and I wish that for them, it can give you a little bit more understanding about why they're so difficult, so that in an interaction, maybe I won't react the way I usually react. I guess that was my hope, that it could provide, you know, not excusing it, but just a little bit of understanding, not knowing where it comes from, but understanding that there's some difficulties there that is producing this, and hoping to gain some understanding from that. But the other thing that I wanted to say is that the phrase that really struck me was, I am as I am. And I just... found it powerful mm-hmm. in a really good way.
Great. Yeah, thank you. And that, by the way, just to clarify that wasn't from the Equanimity Phrases. Yes. That was from the poem by Walt Whitman, to be clear.
Well, now I better confess. Okay. I have single-sided deafness, so I really could not understand or hear most of what you were saying. And I could understand it better if I open my eyes and look at you.
Yeah.
Because there's something...
Yeah.
I don't lip read, but there is something...
Right, right, of course.
But if I did that, it brings me out of the meditative state that I want to be in.
Yeah.
So I chose to just...
Sure.
...be in my own place most of the time. But I heard that phrase, and I did not know where it came from
Exactly.
I didn't hear that. So I appreciate you saying that.
The reason why I want to clarify that is because the phrases, the equanimity phrases, they have a different flavor to them. They have the flavor of right view, the way, you know, it's all of Buddhist teachings is kind of in these phrases in a way. Things are as they are, it is what it is. I am as I am, it doesn't have that flavor. There's some things that are very accepting about it, but it's there's some nuances there that I wouldn't suggest it as an equanimity practice. Yeah, and I can go into, does that make sense? Or
it does, except that I really didn't understand.
Yeah. Right, the other phrases.
You were talking about.
Yeah. One thing that I don't know if you've experimented with the hearing assisted devices here that you can wear and that might help.
It won't help. Auditory nerve. So there's just nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
So I have pretty good hearing in one ear. But
in one ear.
Certain situations.
Right.
It just doesn't come across.
You're practicing great equanimity with things just as they are. It is what it is. So you don't need anything more. You have it already there with that practice. It is what it is.
Yeah, well, that I've come to realize it is what it is.
Beautiful.
It stopped me from doing much. So.
Beautiful.
Thank you for explaining that.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Think I have any? Are we all saying something?
No, if you don't want to, you can pass it on. Yeah.
Okay. Only if you want to.
Yeah, pass it on.
Only if you want.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's one person who didn't get the mic back there. Just to make sure everyone has the opportunity, you can pass, of course, but.
She spoke well for our group and for me. Is this on?
Yes, it is.
But I did connect with something one of these ladies did say, that somehow it's harder to empathize. I find it difficult with that person, that distant person that I hardly know.
Yeah.
It just doesn't stir emotion.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to conjure up a lot of empathy.
Mm.
I can wish them well, but it's very subtle and it's very light, and because I don't know much of what their difficulties are. So I also tend to go to the more difficult person,
mm-hmm.
even when encouraged not to. And I do appreciate how that can veer off into something else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I get more distracted with the person that I'm only lightly connected to.
That's right, of course. That's common.
It just isn't as juicy and as
that interesting. That is so common, because exactly that, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I'll try harder with that, because I just tend to shift to someone I do know better, and maybe that I do have more difficulties with. So
right. Yeah, because more challenging in that way. And what you're saying is not uncommon at all with a neutral person, because we don't know much about them, so the mind tends to wander away more, which becomes more of an interesting practice. Like, okay, come back, come back, come back. So it's not just you. It's not just you. So if, now that you know that it's part of part of this practice that mind will wander more, now you know you'll be more, hopefully more patient with hanging with the neutral person. Thank you. Yeah. So one thing I want to clarify, which kind of came out in the conversation we had and in the phrases, the practice of equanimity is you know, with metta, with loving kindness, it's straightforward when we go through these categories, right? The directionality is really simple, you know. May you be safe, may you be happy, may you be well. May you know, person who's dear, may you, who's the person who I have difficulty with, neutral person, all beings, or may I be happy. May I be happy, may you be happy. Just very simple directionality, right? Directing to yourself, directing to others, right? It's just one. It's very straightforward. You see that? With equanimity, there are two ways you can practice with other people. You may wish them equanimity. May you hold the situation you have with ease. May you be undisturbed with the comings and goings of things, like with a dear person. Oh, dear person, may you hold with your... the difficult, you know, the comings and goings, may you hold it with ease. May you accept things as they are. That's one way to practice it for the dear person, say. There's another way to practice. May I be okay. May I hold with ease the fact that I cannot control your happiness. Do you see? There are two. So each of those concentric circles now have two possibilities, not just one. Is that clear? So may you hold the coming and may you have equanimity. May I have equanimity with your situation, right? May you have equanimity, or may I have equanimity with your situation. You see, whereas with the metta is, may you be happy. Does that make sense? Clear enough? I don't want to go over beat a dead horse. Yes. Hold on. Wait for the.
So I think this was kind of what I was trying to get at,
yeah,
but didn't articulate it. Please. Well, or maybe it's clearer for me. It feels like even if I'm wishing somebody else to have equanimity,
yeah,
at some level, it's really about me.
Yes.
Because otherwise, yes, I wouldn't be concerned about, yes, you in that,
exactly,
situation.
Yeah.
So they're all about me having equanimity,
yeah,
even though I'm wishing it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Yes and yes and yes. Yeah. Essentially, it becomes that. Yeah. Essentially, it points back to practicing equanimity. But there are different ways to kind of, especially when somebody else is in great distress and you see them in great distress, you're wishing equanimity for them. But of course, you're in distress because they're in distress. Yeah. Yeah, wonderful. I'm so glad we got to this, because that often tends to be kind of confusing in equanimity practice. Who am I wishing equanimity for? Who am I practicing for? Well, it's for you, really. Yeah. Yeah, great. Any other thoughts, reflections? Great. It's been very rich. So here's what I would like to ask us as we get close to our closing. I'd like to invite you to close your eyes for a moment and think about the practice we've done today for a moment. Bring it to mind. Let's see, this morning we started with a guided meditation, spaciousness, and then how that was for you. Then we discussed that, and then there's some teachings I shared about equanimity, what it is, the definitions, near, far enemies, etc. And then we had a conversation in groups of four, exploring what equanimity feels like for you experientially, what supports it and what gets in the way. And then there was lunch and lots of conversations I heard over lunch. And then this afternoon we explored the practice of cultivation of equanimity through the phrases, the formal practice of equanimity. And then we had a conversation, discussion in spiral, the observations you had about that in group and sharing what you observed and hearing from others. And then the open conversation. So I'd like to for you to choose one thing, one thing you're taking home, one thing you're learning, you're taking home from this day of practice. Maybe something that has inspired you, you intend to practice more. Maybe it's an inspiration, maybe it's an insight, or whatever it is, or maybe just one word, or just one short phrase. Just one phrase, short phrase, of say at most 5 words or something like that, a sentence, or maybe just one word. See what that is, let that come up. In a moment we'll pass around the mic and just share what you're taking home, just that word or that short phrase. So, wherever the mic is, whoever wants to start, please start and pass the mic on.
For me, what came up was breathing, giving yourself a moment in time between what's going on and what's happened to you. Just give yourself the space, just for a moment, and hopefully that something will resonate with you.
Space.
Sure, ready enough. There's so much to take away. I think the most direct and basic for me is to add equanimity practice to my practice.
Beautiful.
To build on that.
Great, yeah. Thank you.
I think for me, it's the accepting that what it is, what it is, and to realize that I'm ruminating on a lot of thoughts, and that's not accepting, and it's not getting me anywhere.
Focus on speciousness. I'll probably re-listen to, I'll plan on re-listening to the guided meditation from this morning.
Just attention. As I hold the tension, let everything come and go.
Prioritize and strive to be as equanimous in as many different situations as I can possibly be.
I'm going to introduce more into my practice feeling at ease, being at ease, and wishing ease for others.
What came to mind when you asked about the takeaway was that phrase, coming and going, and just allowing things to come and go.
Self-compassion leads to equanimity.
The word is connection.
Developing that spaciousness inside of me.
Yeah, just to include this in my daily practice or weekly spot, you know, for have a little spot in the week for it at least, formally, and definitely liking that phrase about having equanimity. Uh, for the other person or myself in response to the other person's actions or emotions or how they react to situations?
Practice.
Just the term equanimity itself is just, to me, very peaceful and soothing, so I'm going to take that away.
And I think there's one last person.
I think that phrase, caring, I care for you, but I can't control everything for you. Just yeah. Caring without control is important for me.
Lovely. Lovely. I think that's everyone, right? Yeah. Thank you all. Thank you so much for coming today and practicing together, equanimity, cultivating. It's a lifelong process. We aren't done, as folks commented today on that. So we'll keep practicing. And this wraps up the four-month series of the Brahma Vihara. So if you came to one or two or three or all four, yay. Thanks for being here and practicing, and yeah, really appreciate practicing together with you. May you be well, may you accept and be at ease with the comings and goings of things. Take care.
Before you leave, a little reminder, okay. A little reminder that our teacher in our center is solely supported by donations. So there's a donation box by the door. One is for the teacher and one is for the center. And finally, I would like 5 people to stay afterwards. We don't have to do a big cleaning, but we are required to do some cleaning. So I need 2 people that would volunteer for the bathrooms, 1 for the kitchen, 1 to take out the trash, and then 1 to figure to do. Wait, let's do that again. The bathroom people are 2. I just need 2. Okay, 1. Okay, 2 people bathroom, 1 person to take out the trash. Whatever is filled, the trash, the recycling. Okay, very good. 1 person for the kitchen. And then we need somebody who's just going to be general straighten-upper, the pillows and looking everything around there. Okay, great. Thank you very much.